Hey everybody, welcome back to the Sportsmanlike Conduct Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Argott, and I am very happy today. I'm bringing on a guy who I admire closely, who, for those of you who know, I went to the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting back for in 2022, which, I mean, you know, COVID years, everything kind of like that, all that flies by. Went to school there during COVID, and that time sure did fly by, but there was an instructor who was a substitute at one time for me, and then I took his class. His name is Richie Barron. How are you doing there, Richie?
Brian, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on. I've really been looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm glad to have you on. I know we talked about it a year ago. Again, man, I think everyone kind of looks back at school, whether it was high school, grade school, and even college. And there's someone that impacts your life in a certain way. And although there's a lot of instructors at Full Sail, at the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting, that have touched each student differently, not in a different way, has like had an impact on their life. And I definitely would say that you are one of those people for me. I would say for a lot of others, when I would talk to other classmates, you gave very constructive feedback, and you had the patience. And I know that being an instructor, it requires a lot of patience. How are you able to do that while being now you're a director, one of the directors at the school? How are you able to even to be present, to carry that on your shoulders?
Well, thank you, Brian. That means a lot, first of all, for you to say that. You and the rest of our students have meant a lot to me as well. And it's really exciting to see you doing the show and everything else that you've been doing since you graduated. I appreciate you applauding my patience, because I've actually worked really hard on that. In reality, I'm not a super patient person. But what I always want to do is make people feel good about themselves, especially all of you who invested your time to come to our school. And I want you to believe in yourself. And that's important to me. And part of that process as a teacher is to understand that everyone that you interact with is different, and there's a different way to reach each person, right? Yeah. I think it's a great idea to think like, hey, everyone is equal and we want to treat everyone the same way. And that is a goal, but ultimately everyone has a different personality and a different learning style. So what my goal was as an instructor, and still is to give you the benefit of the doubt. If you care about this, if you're willing to put the time and effort into doing this, and in the case of, most of the students that come here, the money as well, if you're willing to put all that into it, I'm going to give you my best and do my best to help you. And look, life throws different punches at you. So sometimes things come up that make things a little bit more difficult. Sometimes some students get a concept more quickly than others, and vice versa. So I try to give everyone a chance to succeed, and I'm never going to be offended if you ask me for something, or if you need extra time, or if you need an extra explanation, because what my goal is ultimately is to make you feel like I care about you, because if I can do that, then I think I can get the best out of you.
Yeah. And I think that was something I always ran into, was like, yeah, you got to dumb this down for me a little bit, and you always did a great job of that. Like, I'm one of those people, definitely a slow learner, a hands-on learner. So I'm like always like, when I'm reading something, I'm like, it's like deer in the headlights. I'm like, can you please dumb this down for me a little bit? And then it's like, once you were able to do that, and then others as well, it's like, okay, now I get it. And I think that was the one great thing about the whole DP school sportscasting itself. It's unlike a traditional college where you just kind of go and do stuff. Like, you are really working with some of the industry's best people who've worked at for ESPN, Fox Sports, other big, sports outlets and in that nature. So I think that's what's great the school brings. And I kind of want to go back, like, before you even started at the DP school. What made you want to get into sports? Like, way before that, I know we talked a little bit before the show. We were talking about baseball cards, and I showed you the 89 Upper Deck Griffey. What made you want to get into sports as a young kid?
I think sports were really the first thing that I was really passionate about in life. And the funny thing about it, if you want a quick story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I probably shouldn't tell this story because it's kind of, it's not the best light of me when I was like a four-year-old kid. But I did not like sports for like my first 4 or 5, 6 years on this earth, right? It wasn't something I did. And there was a TV show at the time called The Smurfs, and you're probably familiar with that. They made little movies out of it fairly recently, yeah. But I was a kid, and my godparents were over at my house with their son, and I wanted to watch some Smurf special that was on TV, and their son wanted to watch some baseball game. So I was very angry about it. And he came and he's like, no, I just got to watch this inning. I just got to watch this inning. And so he kept pushing, he kept changing the channel. And it got to the point where I like literally like picked up a chair and like hit him with the chair. And so he chased me down the stairs and he's like, Dad, get him, Dad. And it's funny to feel how far I've come because I wanted nothing to do with sports at that point. But once we got to, I actually started playing. First sport I played was baseball. I got into swimming and karate shortly after that. But I was just passionate about it. It was something I loved. And when I would watch it on TV, I really liked, you know, learning about the players and what was going on with them and their storylines and all that. So I was an only child. It was an avenue for me to be excited about something in life. And early on, you know, I used to do play-by-play when I would shoot Nerf basketball with myself in my room.
Of course, I remember
and things like that. You know, I know a lot of people have the similar stories. So it was just something I was passionate about, and that passion never died. And I think, unlike some people, at a very early age, I thought that was a path that some way, shape, or form I wanted to be covering sports in my life.
Yeah, when, you know, like you talking about you being a young kid, you know, doing all that stuff. When was it a realization for you that you wanted to actually pursue sports as a career? Because even I think sometimes probably in high school, you know, like, oh, it's a dream to cover sports, but I'm not going to say very few do it, but it's definitely not like, oh, come this way, you're going to go to sports. You know, it's like going to like what a DP school is now. It's kind of like a trade school for that.
Yeah, I think I knew fairly early on that I did have an interest in doing it. I'd say I really secured those thoughts once I got into high school. My mom worked at the local newspaper down the street, so I had some background in understanding journalism and that kind of stuff. And I actually went over there in one summer and worked there and at the newspaper and, you know, basically was writing stories about like the little league games and stuff like that and putting them in a little blurb in the newspaper. So I liked that. You know, I listened to sports radio all night long. I remember when I was in high school, Tony Bruno used to be on ESPN radio before he was on Fox radio. He was a guy I really enjoyed listening to. And I just liked it. I liked being around it. I think I realized I was fairly good at writing and speaking and communicating. So I think by the time I was, you know, early on in high school, I knew that that was the path I wanted. I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. And I was fortunate as a kid. I grew up in the Syracuse, New York area. My first local sportscaster I remember was Mike Tirico.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So having people, there were a lot of really good sportscasters that came through the market. A lot of them because they went to Syracuse University like Mike did. So I liked watching another guy who's affiliated with our program now, who literally is in my class every month, Dave Ryan. He was another sportscaster I watched as a kid. Oh, wow. So I had a lot of good people to watch and see how animated they were and how they got into it. So I think I just decided that's what I wanted to do. That seemed fun to me.
Yeah. Did you like, even like to this day, was there always a sportscaster out there where it's like, that is the guy, like, you know, that's like who I kind of want to be like?
Yeah, growing up, you know, I mean, I had a lot to look at people like Mike, but the first one I guess I would say was my guy was Bob Costas. Oh, yeah. And I just thought he was so intelligent. He had such a wit to him. He was, you know, he's all over the place. At the time, he was covering everything for NBC. He had a great diversity of that. He was able to work well with people, always remembered things on top of stuff, great storyteller. So Bob Costas was probably the first one. As I got a little bit older, I really got into Jim Rome. And I know you've been out in California. He started his career out in California. And I mean, he's still in California. But I loved how he made it fun.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing, in the business has gone a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's in a sense to me, sometimes it gets a little too serious. Like, I like in-depth. I like learning great information. Yes. But ultimately, I want to have fun. And that's why I like Jim Rome and what he does. Yeah. And then from a play-by-play perspective, Kevin Harlan, man. And he's been throughout my life. But the more I listen to him, the more I appreciate him. You know, there have been so many great play-by-play people. But for me, Kevin Harlan will always be the best.
I got to agree with you there. His calls are just like, they're just in that moment. It's like him. And I think Al Michaels comes to mind. It's like, you know, just always like, just like they have this emphasis and they just draw you into the game. Like, you know, like you're there. It's like so cool. Yeah.
And obviously shout out to Dan Patrick too. Can't forget about all that he's done in the industry. Obviously we've got the name on the shirt. He got your name on his degree, but you got his name on your degree, but just so good at so many things. Also very intelligent, funny, on top of things, great leader, you know, obviously his radio show, so many great interviews he's had on that. But that combination of being, you know, lighthearted at the same time, being able to be informative on top of sources, on top of bringing in the biggest guests to share the information, an outstanding anchor on SportsCenter. Obviously, he really was the big superstar, the show with him and Keith Olbermann that really brought SportsCenter to another level. So there's so many to pick from. But yeah, those are some of the few.
Yeah, I always admired his, you know, at SportsCenter, he was terrific and everything like that, of course. But when he left SportsCenter and he left ESPN and, you know, went and did his the Dan Patrick Show, and have the podcast and do everything like that, and just how unconventional it was at the time. You know, I think they had their studio above a bar at one point. I don't know if it's still there, but you know, they did that, and he took some of the guys with them, and they set up, and they made it happen. And of course, like, you know, he had a great name from being at ESPN, but still was not an easy move. That is one of the biggest stories about any sportscaster, anchor, writer that is just always love. It's like, man, this guy, he literally, you know, he would have been totally fine at ESPN for the next 20, 30 years and could have did his thing. But it's like, man, it's like what he just kind of, you know, was wanted to see what's next for him. And he went and did that. And then now.
Yeah, I think to find success in life, you got to take some big swings. Yes. It's easy to play it safe, right? And it's scary to go after something because there is a risk involved.
Of course.
But if you believe in yourself, that's how you're going to get somewhere. Nobody ever made it big by taking the conservative road the whole way, right? Maybe you take that way a lot of the way, but somewhere you got to take that swing. And for him to have the courage to do that, go through with it. And, you know, and if you talk to Dan about it, it was a little scary starting out, because he had to build it from step one, even with his reputation, even with everything else, had to build it from the bottom up. And he was rewarded with that because he was good enough and was able to, you know, persevere through the early times of building everything up where that show has become to where it is now. Much like the program has been. I've been here since just about day one. And it's been great to see what were originally just concepts and ideas turn into people like you that have gone on to graduate and do great things in your lives.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, to stay with Dan, it's like I one day or was just listening to his show and I'm like, wow, that Dan Patrick School of Sportscast, that seems pretty cool. I'm going to check that out. And then I think a year went by and I was like, you know, still in the back of my mind. And, you know, I went back to school at almost kind of his age 30. So, you know. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna go and do it. And it's like, it was right before COVID. It was at the end of 2019. I'm like, cool, I'm gonna sign up. So I signed in. I signed up in January of 2020, and that was my first semester. And then 3 months later, COVID hit, and I was like, God, I am so glad I have this, because if I did not, I mean, I think I still would have been fine. But I'm like, this, getting this education, making these contacts, and doing all this was just better. And I always have Dan to thank for that, because obviously, you know, his name carried a lot of weight in that decision and doing that. But definitely, was there ever, I kind of want to go back there. Was there, you know, we talked about adversity and stuff like that. Was there ever a point in time when you were working in sports, starting out, like where you're like, man, I don't know if this is going to work out for me?
Well, right after graduation from college, I went to the University of Maryland, and I felt pretty good about where I was at. I thought I was pretty good, and I thought that I had done the work in college to prepare myself. I thought at the time I had a decent enough demo reel to get a job. So much like, you know, most of our grads do, I started sending out my work to a lot of different people. The one caveat with me was I graduated in May, and I had signed up to take a trip to Europe in June that year. So I had a very short period of time between graduation and that trip. And I had been, you know, I'd been looking for jobs before. I'd probably started about 4 to 6 months before I graduated. So I had already been in the process. But I remember going to Europe, and at the time the internet wasn't quite where it is now. There was internet, there were places you could do it, but it wasn't like you could just check your phone every 2 minutes or whatever. And I remember thinking to myself, I got to stop a few places at an internet cafe to check and see if I got any emails back from anybody about any of these jobs. So I did that a couple times during the trip. I was gone for a month, and I didn't get an email. So I was like, okay, we'll see what happens. And so I came back, and I wasn't feeling bad about it, but I was like, okay, my apartment that I have in Maryland, is the lease is going to be up in August. So I'm hoping to find a job by then and see where I'm going to go. And I ended up not having a job right up toward the very end of that. And I was like, okay, well, I guess that happens. I'll just pack my stuff and move it back to New York State where I grew up. And right around that time, I ran into a guy. We had an event for the fraternity that I was in. We had this crab feast that we would do every year in Maryland, crab feast. Oh, nice. And this one year it was at this like local bar in College Park, Maryland. So we went there and I ran into him because he was one of my fraternity brothers. And he was a guy when I first met him, I didn't know quite what to think of him. And part of it was because we were going through pledging in our fraternity, but I wasn't sure quite how I felt about him at first because he was giving me a hard time about stuff, right? See. And then later he ended up being like a teaching assistant in one of my classes because he was like a year or two older than me. And he was so nice. I'm like, what, is this the same guy? What's going on with this guy? And he ended up becoming a good friend and someone who was an early mentor for me. Oh, wow. And long story short, he worked as a producer in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And so I run into him at this event and he's like, hey, you got any job yet? And I'm like, no, you know, I've had this and that that I've had contact with, but nothing. And he's like, well, like, at my station, there's two jobs that are about to open. One is as a sports reporter, like the third person in the department. And one is as a videographer, a photojournalist, a news photographer using the video camera. Oh, wow. Right. And so I was like, okay. He's like, so why don't you apply to both? And he wrote on this napkin, scribbled the name of his boss. And so I was like, okay. So I went and I didn't know if I was any, I didn't realize I had any talent as a shooter at that point. So I just thought, okay, I'll send both. So I did. And about a week later, the guy gives me a call. He's like, hey, you want to come in? And this was at about the point where I was starting to maybe feel a little doubt, like, well, like, am I going to get this job? Like, how long is this going to take? I was still confident. But at the same time, it was like, okay, I'm kind of on the clock here. I don't want to go back and move back home, right? So I went for an interview. I was interviewed by the news director, the sports director, and the chief photojournalist.
Oh, dang.
And to this day, I still think is the best interview I ever had. And I nailed it. I nailed it. I was so good. And they were all throwing questions at me. So I got a call from the guy. And he's like, hey, we want to bring you in and hire you. But we're not going to give you the sports job because, you know, at this point, you don't have any experience. This is a top 50 TV market. Yeah. And he's like, but would you be interested in taking the videographer, the photojournalist job? And I said, yeah. So I went for that. And I was like, okay, this will be fun. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me in this career because it was almost like a grad school for 7 months. I was only there 7 months because I ended up getting an on-air job not too long after. Awesome. But I learned from some of the best reporters, photojournalists, producers around. A lot of really talented people worked there at the time. Wow. And I got way better. And then I got my first on-air job. But during that period, that was where I think the doubt was. And I actually got an email from a guy, and I didn't end up getting this job, by the way, but probably 4 months into working there, I got an email from a guy in Elmira, New York. And he was like, hey, you know, you didn't know this, but you were runner up for the job the last time, or you were someone that I really liked and we filled this job. The guy we hired, he had to leave the station, come up for an interview. So it was Super Bowl Sunday. It was when the Patriots played the Carolina Panthers. I remember that.
96?
I was driving through a snowstorm to Elmira, New York, and I got there. I had a great interview again. I didn't get the job. But that gave me a little more confidence moving forward that, okay, you can still be on air.
Oh, wow. So do you always look back at like that 2003? Yeah, it was 2003 Super Bowl and be like, driving up there. Like this was Brady went, what was that 2 and 3 years right there?
Yeah. I mean, it was at the time the Patriots at the time were my second favorite team. but I didn't realize at the time I kind of turned on them and said that, I didn't really like Brady after a while, but cause I was a big Drew Bledsoe guy. But at the time I thought that I liked them. I wanted them to win. So yeah, I remember it.
Which makes sense. It's funny cause you actually grew up you're mostly a Chicago fan, right? You said Bears and was it White Sox that we were talking?
It's actually only the Bears. Yeah. So I grew up in an area. We didn't have any professional sports teams. The closest ones were Buffalo. Yeah. Right. So I was a bit of a contrarian as a kid. I still am to some degree. So I didn't want to just be a Bills fan, and they were really good at the time. They were really good. I liked the Bears because I watched Mike Ditka. I liked Mike Ditka. Yeah. I liked that they played at Soldier Field. I liked the way that they played. They had a really good defense. That's why. But they're the only Chicago team I'm a fan of. The crazy thing about it is that they're by far and away the team that I pay the most attention to.
Got it.
So on a daily basis now, I'm you know, keeping up with them.
Okay, okay. Nice, nice. And for a second, I was like, we grew up in New York, but when, you know, Bears fans.
Yeah, my favorite teams are the Chicago Bears, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Cleveland Guardians, and the no longer with us Seattle Supersonics.
Oh, the Seattle.
So those were my teams growing up.
No Thunder for you? Yeah, it's kind of hard to.
They were for a bit. I said I would like them until the last Sonic left. And the last Sonic to leave was Nick Collison.
Was it Collison? Oh, I thought Durant would be.
Yeah. Well, Durant and Collison were the last two.
Got it, yeah. Cause...
And then Durant left before Collison did.
Got it. So. I did. That's a good fun fact. I would not have thought that Nick Collison was there that long.
Technically, Russell Westbrook was a Seattle Supersonic because he was drafted by them, but they moved 12 days later.
Yeah,
or something like that. So he never played for them.
Yeah, no, that's a fun fact, actually. But I have no room to talk. I'm a Detroit Pistons fan. I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I'm a New York Mets fan. So all my teams.
You know the life. It's weird, isn't it?
My teams are on the East Coast, and I didn't grow up there at all, and I'm from LA. And people are like, how are you an Eagles fan? How are you a Mets fan? It's one of the.
What's your Eagles story? I shared the Bears ones. What's your
Eagles
story?
Is easy. Early 2000s. You know, I just like I grew up more of a fan of players, and I think that's kind of like the way like the. I think I was like the at the forefront of the era where now we just follow players more, and I think that's been like a lot of the things now lately. How it's gone with the like social media and stuff, but anyways, I grew up a fan of Don McNabb. McNabb was my
guy.
Yeah, he was my guy back then, out of Syracuse. Right there in New York. But yeah, he's like, and then I got super frustrated with him as the decade would go on because, you know, he would get us to the NFC title game and then it would just have, just fall short or the Super Bowl would just fall short. And then I became a Pistons fan because Rasheed Wallace left the Trailblazers and got traded to Detroit. And then I stayed with Detroit ever since. And
awesome.
It's been a painful road.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's not been fun lately.
It's like being a Bears fan, kind of. But the Mets. My brother was a Yankees fan, and I wanted the Yankees to lose really bad in the 2000 Subway Series, and that's what happened. Yeah, it's like obviously they didn't lose the Mets.
It's as good a reason as any, Brian.
The Mets lost it 5-6 that year, so I was like, and it happened, and. And that's how I'm a miserable Mets fan. No.
Yeah.
But
good stories. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
All very unique.
My biases never wavered. Although my favorite player to my favorite football player ever has been Tom Brady. So I guess that's the one.
Well, I'm sorry I told you what I did.
It's all good. But yeah, a lot of people hate or like Brady, but yeah, it is what it is. But
I will say this. I gave him, I was very reluctant. I was a big Joe Montana fan too. So I was very reluctant to give him the title of the greatest, but I had to do it after he won at Lambeau Field with the Bucs. Once he showed me he could do it with the Bucs, then I was able to give him the credit that he certainly deserves.
It took a long time for you to give him that. I was like, once he won in Atlanta, I was like, there's no doubt. There's no doubt after that 28-3.
I could see that.
But then, you know, I mean, he might only hold that title for a little short because Mahomes is coming for him big time.
Wait. That's why I want the Chiefs to win every chance they get so he catches him.
Well, how do you feel that he's past Montana?
Well, I mean, you know, Montana was a great player, and I think he handled his business very well. Yeah. But, you know, eventually everything has got to be beaten at some point, right? True. Other than maybe Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak, that might be hard to beat. Yeah. But at some point, every record and every top-tier thing will probably be broken. So.
That's true. And I think for, you know, you think about, like, receivers – still the greatest receiver of all time, still Jerry Rice considered.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then even goes for defense, Lawrence Taylor still the best of all time. Even though you just had
I would agree with that.
Just retire. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. You know, I want to fast forward things a little. So like, you know, you've had you start off your career in there in like that 03-04 range there in sports, and then you fast forward a decade or so. And then what led you to the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting to be an instructor? You kind of leave the field and go into teaching.
That's a great question. So I learned while I was in the middle of the business that I would have these people reach out to me that were, you know, younger in the business, people who wanted to move up, whether it was my station had a job opening or they were just someone that was hungry to keep growing and get advice from whoever they could. So I'd have people email me and they'd be like, hey, like, would you take a look at my demo reel and see what I do and see and give me some advice? So I'm like, yeah, sure. I loved doing that. Yeah. It was fun for me. And so I would take the time and I would like write these long things, like literally go through the whole thing and point out every little thing I could. Right. And what made it especially rewarding for me was they would get back to me and be like, oh yeah, that really helped me. And I made these changes and then I got the job, you know, that kind
of thing. That's awesome.
So it was something that over time I really knew I liked doing. And, you know, I mean, here and there, you know, you might guest speak at a school here or there, that kind of thing. I really enjoyed that environment. I also like to look back at the people who helped me. I had a lot of people on my road up that were there to help me. You know, my first internship was at Channel 9 in Syracuse, New York. We had Jim Lurch, Stephen Fani there that were, you know, really great mentors for me as I was moving up and learning in the business. I went to Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Dave Ross there, really great, helping me learn. Diane Roberts, there were some really Joe McLaughlin, some really good people there to learn from. And it was something where I kind of wanted to be like that. I wanted to be in that role. And over time, I never didn't enjoy being in the business. I always did my whole time in it. But I did have in the back of my mind over time that at some point I wanted an exit strategy for the sole reason that I wanted a more manageable schedule because I wanted to have, you know, a family and time and all that. So I kind of did have it in the back of my mind that that was something I wanted to do, was get out. And when I did that, I really wanted to teach. So I started actually well before I ended up leaving the business. I would reach out places and see where I could, you know, maybe do some adjunct teaching work and that kind of thing. At the time, I was in the state of Florida, which I still am. And most of the schools that I'd reached out to were unable to allow me to do that because their particular universities had rules that you had to have a master's degree to even be an adjunct instructor. So I didn't get a chance to do that some places. So fast forward to when I'm in Tampa, and I really at this point was thinking I would love to work teaching broadcasting somewhere. Right. And I had a mentor who, you know, gave me some thoughts about maybe having an opportunity to go to his school at one point and all that. And so I started thinking about that. And we get to the point where I really was thinking, okay, my contract's going to be up in, you know, another year or whatever. I really want to start positioning myself if this is the move I want to make. So I reached out to all these schools again, same deal with the adjunct instructor thing, but one school in Tampa, which was where I lived at the time and where I still live at this point, reached out to me, returned and said, hey, we're going to be live streaming at the community college, Hillsborough Community College. We're going to do some live streaming. We would love to have your help with it.
Oh, wow.
So I started going over there. I would leave my work for the day. After I finished, I'd go to One Buck Place and do a package and I'd get right over there, you know, and I loved it. And that was really what solidified that I loved working with those students. You know, Narisa Lamison did an amazing job with that program, and she's the one who gave me that first opportunity to really kind of spread my wings and learn how to do that stuff and see what I could be as a teacher. And then around that time, Gus Ramsey sent a tweet out because the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting was opening, and he sent out a tweet. And at the time, I didn't really, you know, check my Twitter super frequently, but I happened to that day and I saw his tweet, and he was looking for instructors. And I saw that two people had liked the tweet, and I knew two people who I knew. So I was like, oh, okay. So I asked them both about Gus. I said, hey, I saw this. What can you tell me about this Gus Ramsey guy? And they both had very encouraging things to say about him. So I went and I applied. Yeah. And I applied and I went and I was one of these people was kind enough to help me with, you know, reaching out to him. And so I did. And then I heard back from, I was actually in the middle of a call for a, I was doing play by play and I was doing a state championship, broadcast. And I was basically going to, getting some information from the coaches before. And I was in the middle of the call and I say, huh, I got a phone call from Winter Park, Florida. That's interesting. So I went in my car and and checked my voicemail. It was from Gus, and, the rest is history. So
oh, that's awesome. If you, say if the community college didn't have that position open up, would you, were you looking to move out of state, or did you know you want to stay in the state of Florida at the time?
I mean, I was open. I was definitely open to anything. If I got an opportunity that I liked, it just so happened that I was fortunate enough that the opportunity ended up being, not too far away.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. It all seemed to work out in, that nature. Going there, what would you say probably, transitioning now from the whole behind the camera on in front of the camera to actually in a teaching role, like, was there any shockers there at first, like that were like, oh wow, this is way different from my normal job from what I used to
No, do? I mean, what's great about our school is that we basically just teach people what's done, right? So it wasn't like that hard, because it was just basically like the way we came up with all the classes was we just brainstorm, well, what do we actually do? Okay, we're doing this broadcast writing class. What do we actually do? How do we do this? What are real life scenarios, right? Yes. So it wasn't hard in that sense. I thought, honestly, the ideas flowed so much that we had more ideas than we could fit into the class. Wow. Okay. You know? Yeah. So there were actually were a lot of similarities, and this is how I relay it, and especially to people who are starting teaching from broadcasting. When you prepare for class, when you come up with your lesson plans, when you decide what you're doing in class, that's producing the show.
There you go.
And when you teach the class, that's anchoring the show. It's not that different. It's the same idea. Like, I'll have a class and I might want to get two more things in, and we don't have time to, so I have to cut them. So I cut the show like a producer would. And then when I'm in class, what's my job? Well, my job as an anchor is to engage the audience, right? I want you to be interested in me.
Right.
Well, what's the hardest thing to do as a teacher is keep all your students paying attention, especially today when they have short attention spans. So you got to catch their attention and do something that wakes them up, right?
Exactly.
So that's my approach. I'd say back to what you said about like the challenges. The hardest thing initially was just the idea of grading. Well, how do I grade it? I don't know, you know. Yeah. And what I found my style to be over time is I will give you feedback on a professional level like you're actually working in the industry. But from a grading standpoint, I have to understand that you're still a student. And so it's not going to be quite as hard hitting as the feedback in terms of the number that you get on your grade. That's my approach.
No, it makes sense. And the next question is like, I know my desire to pick the DP school and you know, and everything in my experience, but for someone that's new to looking fresh out of high school and looking at schools, what is one thing you would tell for them on why they should pick the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting if they want to pursue sports?
Well, I guess the question is how badly you want to do this, right? Is this what you want to do? Because if you do, we're going to prepare you as well as anybody. We're going to prepare you to do all the stuff that you need to know to go in there and succeed, not only succeed, but thrive day one. Yeah. I hear every day from our graduates, wow, it's amazing, especially ones who get a first job. Well, it's amazing how much all the stuff you taught us applies and how far ahead we are of all these other people who just started. It's their first job.
Right.
So if this is what you want to do, then we are the place for you. If you really care about it and that's your number one goal is to work in the industry, then come to us and we're going to get you ready to dive in. Oh, by the way, you're also going to get your four-year degree in a lot less time, right? Yeah. If you're on campus, you're going to get it in 2 years. If you're online, you're going to get it in less than three. And honestly, the online time has actually gone down by 2 months since you graduated. Wow. So it's closer to two. So it's basically 2 years, you can get a four-year degree. Now, the flip side of that is if you're going to do that, you got to work.
You got to work your butt off.
Right? You know what the pace was, yeah. Right? You're not going to get a lot of breaks. You're going to have a lot of tight deadlines. It's not easy. It's going to require a lot of self-motivation. It's going to require a lot of determination. It's going to require that you do the work. So are you prepared to do that? So if your answer is yes to, is this what you want to do? And yes, I'm willing to put in the work. Then there you go. Then come to us. We'll take good care of you.
Yeah, it's all well said. I couldn't have said that any better, Richie. But one of the best decisions I've ever made, and would definitely do it again. And if you want to be around in sports, if you choose to be in any area of sports, unless you're an athlete, then it's like you want to go to the Dan Patrick School of Sportscast, and they'll teach you everything you need to know on camera or behind the camera. There's just so much there's just so much knowledge and so much different courses in there that you will learn from, and you'll relate to with I don't know, you'll relate with a handful of instructors, that's for sure. But Richie, is there anything else that you'd like to say that you haven't already said?
No, I just, the thing that makes this special for me is to see all of you succeed, right? And you asked kind of why I got into it to some degree, into the teaching aspect. And it was to see you all have that same joy that I had. Right. I worked full time about 15 years in the industry before taking on this role. And I got to cover some of the coolest things. Right. And I think about it. I went to Cuba with the Tampa Bay Rays and was one of the few Americans ever to set foot in Cuba at the time. You know, I was in a room with about 12 people, and three of them were Derek Jeter, Joe Torre, and former presidential candidate John Kerry. You know, random stuff like that you run into when you're there. Jimmy Buffett played while we were there. He played a concert for us, and all these like legendary baseball players are there with me. It was an incredible trip. I got to cover, you know, we're in March Madness as we record this right now. I got to cover FGCU making a run, the first 15 seed to make it to the Sweet 16, and these guys who, it was hard to get the people that lived in the town to know who they were, the people on campus to know who they were. And all of a sudden they're the biggest stars in America for 2 weeks. It was an unreal scenario to be there, right? I was at wasn't covering this because I'd gotten laid off from a job a week and a half before, but I was at the 6 overtime game between Syracuse and UConn at the NCAA tournament.
Oh, dang.
So these are experiences of a lifetime. I could go on for hours talking about all that with you, Brian, but I wanted all of you to have your own version of that. And so to see all you succeed, to get calls from people getting jobs and hearing their excitement, to hear that you're happy when you get to graduate and you're happy with what you learned from us, that's what matters to me. So I thank you and everybody else who's come through for giving me that joy now, which is a different kind of joy, but just as good.
Yeah, and I have so much gratitude to you and everybody else at Full Sail. And I appreciate your time for coming on the show today. Again, thank you so much today, Richie.
Thank you, Brian.